Welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
I knew that. Smoke signals.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
Louder, softer.
No, you're fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought maybe you couldn't hear with your earphones. We were having a phone thing. I figure we're having an earphone thing.
Oh, no. We're going to have a great show.
When it rains, it pours around here.
Yeah, the chaos has landed, but now it's kind of like we're coming into the terminal.
And nice,
good.
Nice.
Everything's good.
The chaos plane is doing a better. Okay, good. Because we have an interesting show today. We always have an interesting show, but something kind of new on an old topic. How's that? New on an old topic. So our new best friend is Jo McGuire. She is our hostage for the entire program because there is so much to talk about. She's the executive director of the National Drug and Alcohol Screening Association, which is the largest membership organization in the U.S. for those operating in the workplace drug testing space. She was appointed to serve on the Colorado Governor's Task Force to regulate Amendment 64 due to her expertise in the drug testing industry and has participated in the United Nations General Assembly on the World Drug Agreements. Phone's ringing again. That's always a bad sign. The 68th session of the Commission on Narcotic Drugs and the first and second Latin American Congress on Workplace Drug Testing. She's a certified substance abuse program administrator with a bachelor's in sociology and a minor in cannabis studies. Did you even know there was such a thing?
No.
You can minor in cannabis studies from Colorado State University in Pueblo. Jo serves as a board member for the Community Alliance for Drug-Free Youth Science Team and the Recovery Ready Workplace Institute's Employment Council. She's recognized as a subject matter expert and a seasoned public policy advisor. Seasoned, I like that.
Yeah.
Bill and I are seasoned, too, just for the record.
Just a little seasoned.
We live in a seasoned community, as a matter of fact, with a lot of other seasoned people.
Seasoned and spicy.
I want my seasoning to be cayenne pepper, but that's just me. All right. So do we have Jo on here?
I am here.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. The phone was ringing off the hook, which was... I thought, okay, something bad's happening.
Somebody called in and wanted to know information about a North Carolina softball game, and I'm like, I have no idea.
Yeah, you know, we're not the boss of that today.
Mm-mm.
Definitely, spoiler alert, we're not doing North Carolina softball today. Unless, Joe, part of your seasoning goes into North Carolina softball.
It does not. Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, me either. Absolutely not. So
they are having the Ironman competition.
Huh.
Next weekend,
yeah. If it was this weekend, you'd probably have a lot of expired people out on the trail.
Oh, my God, can you imagine? Yeah, you're going to run, what, 70 miles or something?
Talking about parking problems today. Wait till next weekend.
I can't wait.
Yeah.
I'm super excited.
Well, it was 111
years. We'll have to call our own show.
Yeah.
Yeah, boo. So, Joe, I don't know what – first, before we launch into too much here, in your bio it says you had to regulate Amendment 64. What exactly is that in Colorado? What's your Amendment 64?
Well, that was the constitutional amendment that was passed in the state of Colorado that legalized adult recreational use for marijuana. And it's kind of an interesting story. I was out there debating and really arguing that this was a very bad idea before the election. And after the vote, the governor's task force, they kind of set up this, I don't know if it was real or pretense, to be honest with you, in the whole scheme of everything. They set up these subcommittees. And every committee was to be, quote, fair and balanced with both sides of the issue being represented. On the very first day that I showed up to my subcommittee, which was taxation, banking, and civil law being the part that was about employers' rights to test, I was told by the cannabis industry out loud in public in a public meeting that I could shut my mouth and stay out of the conversation for the duration of the next several months. I didn't do that, but I learned immediately what I was in for.
Holy cow. Yeah, because that seems super fair and balanced, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah, because Yeah.
But they kind of said it to the wrong person, because what they did was they lit a fire, and it still hasn't gone out. So
so you didn't keep your mouth shut.
I did not.
Yeah.
You are a troublemaker.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. They never factor that in, you know. It's like if you're gonna shove somebody around, you should really assess them first. So the initials for your organization are NDASA, the National Drug and Alcohol Screening Association. Just so that when we say that going forward, people will be like, people will be like, it's the what? Okay, so we got that handled, and then. I specifically posted the why about your organization. I thought that was really maybe kind of a good place to start. And maybe a little bit about what you guys do, but why? Because people are like, oh, drug testing, schmug testing. I mean, you know, it's just so invasive and yada, 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 yada. But the stats you guys give are amazing. So,
well, I'll tell you something. I realized very early on in this career, you know, I always say nobody chooses to go into drug testing, like says that's what I want to be when I grow up. we all kind of fall into it in a weird way. And I was actually working in a school safety program in the state of Colorado. I loved it, wanted to do it forever, but it was 100% grant funded, and the state was not, it was Colorado State based, even though it was a nonprofit. We lost all of our funding at the end of 2008, the beginning of 2009. And a lot of that work involved talking to kids about risk behaviors. So I put my resume out to my board members, and one of them was really involved in engaging youth in her community. And she also happened to run a drug testing company. So I was like, great, I just get to go work for her. She lives in my own community. I don't have to commute to Denver. I get to talk to kids about, you know, risk behaviors. This is awesome. I was there about a week, and she walked into my office and was like, you know, you actually have to go do those drug tests out there, right? So I figured out real quickly that was part of my job also. And I wasn't thrilled about that, to be honest with you. And then she sent me to a national conference to get my training credentials so I could figure out how all of that worked. And I had some really good trainers who shared how drug testing is part of the safety sensitive employee testing program for the U.S. Department of Transportation, how it saves lives, how it impacts people out on the roads, the highways, the byways, America's traveling public, and our families. And I sat there and went, okay, now I can get behind this. And I really honestly didn't think I would even do it forever, although I need to be mission-driven. So, you know, I thought, well, you know, this will carry me over in the meantime, kind of a thing.
Yeah, right.
And then all of the Amendment 64 stuff happened in Colorado pretty shortly after that. It was just a little bit of time, and because I was so involved in community drug prevention work, I started bumping into people like HIDA, you know, our folks from our local HIDA in Colorado, and
High Intensity Drug Task Force. We can't acronym.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, High Intensity Drug Trafficking Area, and they watch America's byways for drug trafficking, human trafficking, etc. And we were just having a local community drug prevention meeting to see if we could do some 420 alternate activities for our kids in our high schools. And I ran into Tom Gorman there, and he said, you should be out here talking about what could happen in the workplace if marijuana is legalized in Colorado. And initially, I'm like, not that I didn't care, I did, but I don't know what to say about that. And so he invited me to hear him speak to a bunch of college kids, and I went to the debate and watched him. And I don't know if you guys know Tom Gorman, but he was an old, crusty, retired cop. And didn't really click with those college kids very well. And afterward, I said, move out of the way. Let me do that next time. Don't get back up there on that stage. But I very quickly learned with the Amendment 64 stuff. I mean, that really shaped me and the founding of Indesa. I learned that the long-term goal and strategy and even the immediate present goal of groups like NORML and Drug Policy Alliance and Marijuana Policy Project is to eliminate drug testing altogether because they say it's unfair for marijuana users. And in those arguments, I heard a lot of lies, twisting of the truth, misperceptions that are being spread about how drug testing works. And I just thought, I have to tell the truth because I don't see anybody else out here telling the truth. And that's really kind of the very beginning of the thinking for forming Indesa. There was another membership association out there that I was a part of and very engaged with. They didn't want to get involved. They didn't want to engage. They didn't want to, you know, like that. Politics is none of our business. And I just felt differently. And so many of my colleagues did as well. And eventually, over a couple of years, we decided, yeah, we need to start this organization. And we actually absorbed the first association I was just talking about. Let me think here. 5 years, on a five-year anniversary, we absorbed that association, making us the largest in the industry.
Wow. Well, what do they use? You know, when they say that you know, you shouldn't drug test in the workplace and all that, do they think you shouldn't test for anything? I mean, I'm sure there's a group for that, but...
Right. Ultimately, that's always going to be their position because... NORML and Drug Policy Alliance in particular, they really are for normalization and legalization of all drugs. But let's just take a step back. Their primary argument that they've held on to for years, going back to like the 80s and 90s, is that urine testing does not test for impairment, and therefore that's unfair. Now, their primary, because their goal is, like, everybody should use pot whenever they want and leave us alone, right? But what they've done is they've taken the thing in your analysis where you, and this is really for testing of all drugs, you can't pinpoint when someone used that substance, right? So you do a drug test, you can't say, oh, you used today at 10 p.m. during the workday. Mm. No, it's going to be residual, right? It's going to take a little time to metabolize and stay in the system. And so we're looking for, in drug testing programs, we're looking for lifestyle use. We're looking for people who have violated their workplace policy in some capacity. We're looking for someone who may still be under the influence, but you might not be able to tell unless it's a test for cause. But in highly safety-sensitive positions like airline pilots, school bus drivers, over-the-road truck drivers, there's zero tolerance all the time. Like, you don't get to just claim that you can use on Friday night and show up on Monday morning. That's not what your job looks like. That's not what your agreement, you know, even if it's a social agreement, but your work contract looks like. You've agreed to zero tolerance. Well, these folks go out there and say, look, because it's not a specific impairment test, it's unfair, it violates rights, it's against our civil rights, and it needs to go away. And so what they've done, though, brilliantly, because they've had a lot of brilliant strategies over the years, is they've perpetuated a narrative globally for decades that has stuck. And that narrative is, I can smoke pot one time and then 30 days later fail a drug test, and that's categorically unfair, therefore drug testing should go away. That premise is a complete lie. It's a falsehood. It's scientifically impossible. It is not true. But the world believes it. Even people in my own industry believe it because we've had nothing countering that false statement for decades.
And that, unfortunately, that those types of perceptions, we've talked about it so many times when this topic comes up, that the folks making the decisions oftentimes on this come from a totally different era with a completely different relationship to this substance, and just have not ever updated. You know, they're just completely unfamiliar. When I talked to, just had a guy who's 30 years old the other day, and he said, "Oh yeah, you know, sometimes when I can't sleep, you know, I just, you know, smoke a little pot. It's really helped me sleep." I go, "That's a terrible idea. Are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. You have any idea how many chemicals are in that?" And he's like, "Well, it's better than pharmaceuticals." I go, "No, it's just more mysterious than pharmaceuticals. Like you could at least list the things that are in pharmaceuticals, whether you like them or not is another matter. But it doesn't mean they aren't there. It just means you don't know what they are.
Right.
Not a clue.
And that is really part of what we have battled, is just that it's become such a truth in our society that this is how this works. Something that goes hand in hand is cheating the drug test. And even the groups that I previously mentioned, I mean, they have tutorials on how to cheat their drug test. High Times Magazine has for sale products used to cheat the drug test, and the little cartoon next to it is cheating the workplace drug test.
Holy cow. So hold that thought. Yeah. Let's come back first of all, I want to spell out who the organizations are and all that, because for people who don't speak marijuana, we throw it around, you know, normal and all that. And normal sounds like that sounds like a good organization. We'd like people to be more normal. unfortunately, like all things, it actually means the opposite. We'll come back and decode some of that for you. We are here with Joe McGuire. And we have a ton of information for you today on drug testing. You may not be drug tested, but you know what? You are out in public, and you hope that some of these other folks are, and this is why. You can find out more at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
Lace-up boots and faded jeans, a homemade sandwich, a half a jug of tea. Average Joe, the average pay, the same old end. The same old day, but there's nothing wrong with a hard hat and a hammer. Kind of glue and sticks this world together. Hands of steel and cradle of the promised land. God bless the working man.
For the past 2 weeks, Aaron's got me on my toes. Like, I'm running around, being very animated. Thank you so much. Yeah, your S-bag comment, your mic was hot. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, like last week when our guest said a swear, and we watched Alex go into hyperdrive and slide across the room. It was very exciting. It's all very exciting.
I'm glad I can entertain the hosts.
Yeah, it was actually exciting twice. Oh, so funny. So, Joe, that's one of those misnomers, that people who smoke pot drive slow, right?
Yes, absolutely it is. I'll tell you, when drug testing was first implemented by the federal government back in the 90s, it kind of started in the 80s, but then was codified into law in the 90s for Department of Transportation workers in particular, the amount of crashes and fatalities that were happening on America's roadways due to commercial truck drivers being under the influence, it was happening in other modes of transportation as well, but the amount of commercial drivers was staggering. The amount of fatalities was staggering. It's missing signs, missing signals. It's slow response time and not braking in time. We're talking trucks that would go on off ramps and not see that there were 16 cars on the off ramp waiting and plow through them. Like, it's not just the Cheech and Chong driving slow, ha ha ha. Missing the little kid in the roadway, not being able to stop in time. You know, and also, I mean, speed can be a factor too. I'm not going to take that away from it. But just because slow driving happens does not mean that's okay. Slow response times are deadly.
Absolutely. And so the organizations, like NORMAL, what does NORMAL really mean? What does it stand for, I should say?
National Organization to Reform Marijuana Laws. And they've been around for several decades, quite a colorful and interesting history. NORMAL is the driver behind marijuana legalization since the, 60s and 70s. Really think of kind of like the Vietnam era, civil unrest era, you know, all of that. This really became kind of the battle cry, was that eliminating marijuana, you know, legal marijuana, was discriminatory, and that people had the right. It's always been framed as a civil rights issue for them. So they almost came close to federal legalization back in the late 60s, early 70s, and they kind of miscalculated some relationship that they had with Jimmy Carter and his drug czar. And so it failed, and it kind of went backwards. And then the Nancy Reagan era, Just Say No, the angry moms that were tired of their children, you know, dying from drug overdoses and getting hurt by substance use, that all kind of culminated at the same time as Candace Lightner and Mothers Against Drunk Driving. It was sort of this perfect storm that set legalization back on its heels for a bit. But all they did is they went back to the table, regrouped. We saw the spinoff of Drug Policy Alliance, which is the policy side, and then eventually Marijuana Policy Project, which is the legislative, like they get in there and get those state laws changed. And they got really smart because they seeded their organizations with young attorneys that really believe in the freedom to use drugs. And they're very passionate. They went from, like, hippie protests, like literal, you know, legal, illegal smokeouts and stuff like that where everybody would smoke in public, to high-powered lobby firms in Washington, D.C. that are incredibly impressive and well-funded. Mm-hmm. So they are a force to be reckoned with.
Well, I think you hit it on the head right there. They're very well-funded. The amount of money that this industry is generating is, I think, you know, can't be overlooked in fighting this battle. They've got so much money to throw at it, and it makes a difference.
Yes, it absolutely does. And they sometimes I feel as though the funds are just endless, but that's why where we are right now with Schedule 3. In the beginning, you know, the funders were like, well, NORMAL was launched with a grant from Playboy, you know, so there were those types of groups that funded them, you know. And then eventually you had George Soros coming in and backing that, and really with his Open Society Foundation just really pouring. Once he saw that there was the ability to legalize marijuana in the states, that was just an absolutely endless resource of funds. And the history on that's pretty incredible. Now they've made enough money, you know, in the cannabis business and the investment of cannabis businesses in the United States. They pretty much can fund themselves. It's not that there's never any outside funding, because there is, but just take a look at Kim Rivers with Trulieve. She has been in the White House getting it done for Schedule 3. And she's poured millions into getting that done from her own pockets. And so it's pretty incredible to watch what that money has done.
So for people who don't follow this real closely, and so that they don't just kind of tune out on the message, why? Why would somebody pour their own money into legalizing marijuana?
Well, these days, the why is because it's like you got to think about it as Wall Street investing. They're investing in themselves. So, you know, that's kind of right now, it's just a self-perpetuating investment. But back in the early days, I always think this is about money. You always follow the money. You always go back to there's someone there who's going to get rich off of this and make money. But ultimately, Ethan Nadelman, who ran the Drug Policy Alliance for many, many years and really sparked the recent college movement, not the 60s college movement, but the 2000s, got those college kids really lit up for marijuana. He used to say the reason is we love drugs, and the goal is legalize all drugs because we love drugs. And he would say that over and over. He's on video saying it. It was not a secret. So there's a little bit of a dual purpose going on there. But if we really want to get down to a very real conversation, all you have to do is dig into the fact that George Soros is funding and backing and supporting, because what is the Open Society Foundation? I mean, that's really all about breaking down any kind of democratic government, you know, represented government. He loves to create chaos. He loves to break down societies and rebuild them in, you know, the way that they enjoy seeing them, which is completely socialistic. And I think it goes deeper than that. But I don't think everybody that's involved in those programs really fully understands what that long-term picture looks like.
Hey, really quick, didn't George Soros pass his inheritance off to his son? So his son is now the czar of all that meddling?
Yes, his son is just picking up the mantle. He's got very, very high-profile friends. I mean, they hang out and socialize with people that are at the highest echelons of government. And the thing that's so frustrating is, it doesn't matter the party. It doesn't matter if it's Democrats or Republicans. One thing that's so insidious about the Drug Policy Alliance in and of itself is that their mission statement sounds so good that people go, oh, my gosh, I believe in this. Like decriminalization for people who have been unfairly put into jail for drug use and racial disparity and, you know, they talk a lot about medically assisted treatment, but what they really, if you look at their website, they talk about free needle exchanges and safe injection sites. That's the kind of idea. I'll give you an example of the ideology around this, okay, because they talk a lot about discrimination, and it's always, always, always about discrimination. And
right.
So you've got to...
Sure. Everything is, right?
Because
right?
Nobody will fight that.
Yeah. Exactly. So we're all, none of us want discrimination. So I have had the opportunity for the last couple of years to speak at the United Nations, and I'm sure some of the listeners right now just went, okay, I'm shutting her off. I get it. Like,
I totally get it.
But hang with me because there's a story here. I'm working with a group that we are trying to, Soros has just, he is really invading the United Nations, and he's working very hard to infiltrate every committee, especially on narcotic drugs and crime. And there's a small group of us who are trying to make sure that they cannot break the rules and distort the rules and completely take over, because we've all watched it happen here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I don't want to say it's the last battleground, but it's really scary because some of these countries come to the table, like Nigeria. They're suffering. They want to have good policies around narcotic drugs and crime. Of course they look to the United States. Well, we're screwing it up royally over here. I'm sorry, but we are. And so they go into these meetings and they just want, what are best practices? What is good information? And so, you know, sometimes there's those of us there who can guide them and say, don't make these mistakes, et cetera. But I digress. I was in a breakout workshop at the last Narcotic Drugs and Crime gathering, and there was a presentation on the Eindhoven Compact, which states, the United Nations has had a statement in the past that every child deserves to grow up in an environment that is drug-free, and that should be one of their core rights. And so we believe in that as a human right. Children should get to be raised in a drug-free environment. Solace's group has tried to remove that from the accords, and so we're fighting things like that, right? So I'm listening to this presentation, and, of course, people from Open Society Foundation, which is Soros's organization, are in the room. They're all young people. They're like college students, and nobody's over 30 for sure. And this one young woman raises her hand, and, you know, they're fighting back on drug-free messaging. They say it's an impossible goal to achieve. You shouldn't ever use those words. They should be stricken from the verbiage because drug-free is an impossible standard. And there was a lot of debating and bickering. And at one point, she raises her hand and she says, I am a proud drug user. I use all kinds of drugs. I use drugs that are considered illegal and illicit. I use them every day. I can't function without using the drugs that I use. But I happen to live in a place where that is not punished, and there are no punitive views. So therefore, with my support team around me, I can function at a very high level. I can be here today to engage in these conversations and be a thriving member of society, even while I'm high. And it is wrong of you all to discriminate against me and think that I should not have a voice in these conversations just because I'm exercising that civil right. And I'm sitting there listening to this going, never in my life, I mean, I'm almost 60, but never in my life did I think I would be part of a national conversation where someone would say, I identify, use that language, I identify as a drug user, and I'm just proud of it.
And brag about it, yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, that's where, that's the ideology of where they want to take us, to say, if you look down on someone that makes that choice, then you are the problem. And I just got to tell you guys, you know, I have a son right now that is in prison for violent crimes, and they are a direct result of substance abuse. And that is a horrible, you know, very painful story for me. But I have lived with that. I'm currently raising his little girl that's a first grader. And his drug use has impacted my entire life down to the day by day, minute by minute. And he's been gone for 2 years. But my whole entire family is impacted as a result of this. I need to go on I'm doing a 2-day symposium the next 2 days. I have had to find 5 different people that can help me get her to and from school over the course of 2 days and get to dance and, you know, do this and do that, because I need the whole entire village. And, you know,
Because drugs have made your life really awesome.
Yeah, I mean,
exactly.
I have something to interject really quick. Before you guys came in, I was watching an interview with Bill Maher and, I can't think of his name.
Some other guy.
The guy that was shot. He was assassinated.
Charlie Kirk.
Yeah. Yes. And they were talking about, you know, AIDS babies and how does that work. People don't realize your sins affect other people.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, that's exactly what you're talking about.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
It is not a victimless crime. It's not. I'm sorry. It's not a victimless activity.
Well, it's also not a life enhancer. I mean, moreover than anything, I guess if you don't care about anybody else, it's not going to enhance your life either. And so advocating for that, because it's going to help make society better, other people's lives better, it's like, I'm not really sure, you know, you could coherently make that case. We have to take a really quick break. We're going to come right back. Our guest is Jo McGuire. She, and I'm going to look here, she is the executive director of the National Drug and Alcohol Screening Association, which is the largest membership organization in the U.S. for those operating in the workplace drug testing space. We're going to get a little more into why they do that, because I think the stats will blow your mind. In the meantime, this goes out to that stupid woman from your meeting. I found a song for her. Okay. Hit it, Alex.
Feeling better now that we're through. Feeling better 'cause I'm over you. I learned my lesson and left a scar. Now I see how you really are. You're no good, you're no good, you're no good. Baby, you're no good. I wanna say it again. You're no good, you're no good, you're no good. Baby, you're no good.
Well, I don't know, but I've been told you never slow down, you never grow old. I'm tired of screwing up, I'm tired of going down, I'm tired of myself, I'm tired of this town. Oh my, my, oh hell yes. Honey, put on that party dress. Buy me a drink, sing me a song. Take me as I come, 'cause I can't stay long.
Let's dance with Mary Jane. One more time to kill the pain.
Never-ending music about it either. Tons. And so much of it we listened to when we were growing up had no clue what it was about, which is always a little mind-blowing. So your organization, founded in 2018, I guess we didn't really say that, it says right off your site here, as a public safety response to a growing need for training, advocacy, and best practice standards for the drug and alcohol testing industry. And so you're thinking, well, you know, really, do we need this? How big a deal is it? Oh, I don't know. How about this? Nearly 70% of the estimated 22.4 million illicit drug users ages 18 or older are employed full or part-time. Doesn't that explain a lot?
Yeah, it makes you wonder how many people are actually doing drug testing.
Well, as soon as you call customer service or walk into a business.
A lot of them work at Walmart in Reading.
I was going to say, man, sometimes it's just very, very telling. 50% of workplace accidents and up to 40% of employee theft is caused by drug abuse. So let's just say you don't do drugs. Nobody you know uses drugs. You live in this magical world where it never touches you. Well, hot tip. If 50% of the workplace accidents and 40% of the employee theft is caused by drug abuse, you're paying for it.
Yeah.
Your wallet right now, that funny little sound you hear, it's your wallet crying.
That's exactly right.
God. I do think there's a lot to care about in the world. There's a lot not to care about in the world. Most of it's on social media, actually. But there's a lot to care about, and sometimes people kind of prioritize the things that touch them most directly, and I think this issue is one of those things that is easy to dismiss if you are not affected like your family is, with a family member who is a substance abuser. It's coming for all of us, but at the very least, in the meantime, while you're waiting to find your direct connection, you're paying for it.
Exactly. I mean, that is the reality of it. We can see that significant money is saved by employers who do conduct workplace drug testing. First of all, drug testing is a deterrence and detection program. Unfortunately, there have been people out there who have used it punitively. That's something that we don't like either. But in the whole scheme of things, it saves lives. And we know that. It saves lives. It saves money. It increases productivity, reduces absenteeism, and all of the stats that you just read, all of those things, the inverse is true by completing a drug testing program. But ultimately, when the entire U.S. Department of Transportation program began, we had a series of disasters like USS Nimitz, the Chase Conrail's Maryland train crash, the Exxon Valdez, all of those, the operators were impacted by substance abuse. And there were several others that all happened like around that same time and culminated. And it was Ronald Reagan who finally said enough. Like he did a presidential order and he said federal employees will be tested, period. And here's the 5-panel drugs. And of course, because of Congress and, you know, how things work, it still took a couple of years to get that all implemented. But that drug testing program to this day has been incredibly effective. We know that employees in a mandatory drug testing program use 50% less. We have 50% less positivity rates on accidents, injuries, and that type of thing. Now, I also want to say this. It was very fascinating to me. When I first got into this arena, I could very easily find all of those statistics through Department of Labor, through State Departments of Labor, through workers' comp records that were kept. I could go to any state and find, down to the drug, what the prevention was, what the positivity rates were, all of that. In the Obama era, right after Colorado, Washington, California, and Oregon legalized, that all of that information was pulled. And I started calling and asking, like, where's this data? Where's this data? And at first I was told, websites are being redone. And I'm like, across the country all at the same time?
Yeah. Coordinated effort.
Yeah. So I did have some other colleagues that were helping me with this, many of whom are now retired, but they had been kind of involved in those first, like, parent movements and things. And they were watching this, and they were watching my work. And so they started calling me and saying, you're not putting out these stats anymore. What's going on? And I said, this data is disappearing. So they started calling their states, Department of Labor. We all started like a network of calling and calling. And then finally, one day, we got the answer. We consider this information to be discriminatory. And so it's been removed. Discriminatory against whom? Because there were never names mentioned. This was completely anonymous data. Discriminatory against what is the answer, and that's marijuana.
Exactly.
Wow.
So how did they they had all this information prior to legalizing it. They legalized it anyway. Why?
Well, ultimately, it kind of seems like the two things don't really have anything to do with each other between legalization and workplace drug testing, right? But I mentioned I'm doing a two-day symposium tomorrow. You guys caught me. Your timing is amazing because I'm doing eight presentations over the next 2 days, and the one I'm working on right now is the normalization of legal marijuana. So it's all fresh in my brain. But Normal has been putting out position statements against workplace drug testing for decades. They've got a library that's phenomenal. So ultimately, legalization didn't have anything to do with workplace drug testing. But when those first four states legalized, and then we had that meeting for the governor's task force that I spoke about, and I piped up and said, you know, never would we ever want to go against the Omnibus Transportation Testing Act because nobody wants pilots and et cetera, right, flying high.
You would hope.
Initially, the cannabis crowd that was represented said, oh, yeah, we can all agree on that one thing. Now, in those meetings, it was decided that Colorado wouldn't touch employers' rights. We had a strong history of employers' rights to test in our state. We had several laws that protected employers' rights. They protested and said those laws need to come into alignment with an employee's now constitutional right in the state of Colorado to use marijuana. They advocated to change Colorado law to restrict employers' rights. The committee voted no. Now, this was supposed to take one afternoon. It ended up dragging on and on because they protested. They wrote a position statement in opposition of it, which I have, and they made their position very clear. They lost in Colorado. Colorado got to keep employer drug testing. But these are not dumb people. They are very, very smart. And so from that moment forward, in every single state where they brought forward a legalization initiative, they restricted employers' rights. Initially, there were mild restrictions. Now you have states like California, where you guys live, and Nevada, where per state law, you are not to pre-employment test someone for marijuana unless you can prove that there is a safety-sensitive value in it. And in California, you can only test through an oral fluid test. You cannot make any employment decision based on any other bodily fluid unless it can detect active THC. So your analysis is out in California. So this trend started, and it's their big battleground right now. They really want workplace drug testing to go away. And initially, I had said to my board members, look, we know Department of Transportation testing is safe because nobody wants pilots flying high, nobody. Well, I'm telling you what, that has now changed. What we've been doing is working on a safety carve-out for DOT testing with all of this Schedule 3 happening. I can explain a little bit more about that, and I think it'd be very interesting for y'all to know. But I was sitting in an office in D.C. from a representative from Oregon who had plaques from Normal all over the wall. And I said, look, I think that we should be able to come together on at least a safety carve-out for Department of Transportation employees because none of us want pilots flying high, right? So can we at least, like, agree on this one thing? And they said, no, we can't agree to that. In fact, we want a safety carve-in. And I said, what is that? And they said, we think marijuana use should be protected with DOT. And so I said, okay. Yeah, I'm in our nation's capital, and I said, all right, so in 2 weeks, you go over there to the airport, and you're going to fly across the country to Oregon, and you're okay if your pilot smokes a bowl in the terminal before he gets on the plane? And the young attorney for this representative said, yeah, as long as he's not high, yeah.
As long as he's not high, he just smoked a bowl.
How did those things happen at the same time?
Gives a whole new meaning to Rocky Mountain High.
It's a whole new meaning to stupid.
So before we leave this topic, what?
Oh, we're never leaving this topic.
Well, as far as testing in California, I work for a company that drug tests every new employee. We administer the drug test. How does that
just affect? A swab? It's a swab deal.
Yeah, it's a mouth swab. You do that, you send it in, and it comes back positive, negative. But if marijuana is legal in California, how does that affect the drug test results? Are they testing for marijuana, and are they using those results to determine employment? How does all that work, and is it actually legal?
That is a really great question, and I'm so glad you asked that question because first of all, it depends on the company policy. The company policies are really what guide the drug testing program for every company. Those policies need to be in alignment with state law. They may or may not be testing for marijuana. You have to check that company's policy. If they haven't identified that those folks are safety sensitive, that it's probably not on the drug test. Now, in the state of California, because they did say you can only test for the active metabolite of THC, an oral fluid, a lab-based oral fluid test is allowable. A lot of people think that marijuana testing in California is just straight up illegal and they won't do it, but that's not true. You have to use a particular type of drug test, which is the lab-based oral fluid test.
Do the drug test tell you the potency of the THC level?
It's like a yes or no.
Okay, gotcha.
Pass, fail.
Yeah, all you get is the presence in system, and that is what it is.
So you say that again. They're testing for what?
The presence in system, which means you've got it in your system, and that means you've consumed it within the last 2 to 3 days.
Okay. So if they've used in the last 2 to 3 days, if California says it's legal, what then?
So every employee signs an employee handbook when they come to work.
Mm-hmm.
And that employee handbook is supposed to include the safety policies. And in the safety policy is the drug and alcohol policy, typically. Mm-hmm. And that agreement that you make with your employee when you sign that handbook says, I will agree to abide by these policies, one of which should be that you will not come to work under the influence of an impairing substance or work under the influence of an impairing substance, but that you will come to work every day prepared to work in a safe manner for yourself, for your coworkers, for the company, and for the public.
Correct.
Hold that thought, you guys. I hate to cut you off in the middle of it, but the news is doing that live radio, darn it. Anyway.
Yeah, let's come back to that.
Yeah, we're coming back to that.
That's a real sticky widget.
Here's
right
a little
there.
Song for our pilots. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at
wethepeopleradio.us.
Fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars. And let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my hand.
I know why, yeah. Cause I got high, because I got high, because I got high.
Go to the next, go to the next, go to the next.
I was gonna go to work, but then I got high. Ooh, I just got a new promotion, but I got high. Now I'm selling dope, and I know why, cause I got high, because I got high, because I got high. La la da 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 da. I was gonna go to court before I got high. I was gonna pay my child support.
And there you go. That is all of it in a nutshell. And we can, like, laugh a little bit because the guy who does that's kind of funny. But bottom line is that is a true story.
Oh, yeah.
For a whole bunch of people.
So we were talking about
we have to say who she is, though. It's Jo McGuire. She's the executive director of the National Drug and Alcohol Screening Association.
Yeah.
And there's just so much to discuss. But we were into the workplace testing.
Right.
Bill was drilling workplace testing. Go back, Bill.
Well, I'm just, I don't know. I guess I've never really been comfortable being the administrator of the drug test. I'm not a medical professional, and my training consists of reading a flyer that came on my email on how to do a drug test. And I don't know. I just never felt qualified, I guess. I mean, I know how to do it. I can read directions and swab somebody and stick in an envelope and send it off, but... you know, when you talk about how drugs don't affect other people, it affected me because I'm not comfortable doing that. I have a job to do, and I just don't feel that I should be put in a position to test somebody's drug result. I mean, they used to go down to a clinic. And
yeah, what happened to that?
They don't do it anymore. Now it's all done locally. You get a little drug kit, you test them, and you send it off, and they send you back the results. But
is that normal, Joe?
I've got you.
Is everybody doing that?
I got some updated news for you on that. When I went to work over at Costco, they just give you something to chew on for about a minute and a half, and they know right then and there what the results are.
Really?
Really?
Wow.
I don't know. I guess.
Is that real?
That's really interesting.
Yeah. I've never heard of
that. I mean, you probably ordered that off of Amazon or something. I don't know, but,
Costco has secret gum from Amazon.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure, but the reality, there's always new emerging technology, so someone somewhere sold them on that and said this is an awesome thing to do. I don't know. They didn't call me, but that's okay. Ultimately, it used to be that you went to some type of a clinic or a collection site. A lot of those have been driven out of business because economically so many people have just dropped the drug test from their workplace policy because of this type of political pressure. It's hard to find those anymore. So a lot of companies, have said, hey, Bob, you get this job, which sucks because... You aren't. You're not a trained professional collector, which we like to see and encourage people to use. We have training that we provide and, to help people kind of understand the efficacy and what they're participating in and whatnot. But I don't love those choices, but I do know that they happen, and they've happened all over the country. A lot of employers, I mean, we're seeing year over year employers just continue to drop the drug test, and it'll happen even more with Schedule 3. But ultimately, the whole thing, because I was thinking on the break, I want to take a step back and make sure that we acknowledge there are a lot of people and even extremely conservative people who do not like the concept of drug testing because they do feel like it is a violation of personal rights. And this is a strongly libertarian view that drug testing is, you know, within personal rights. And so I've said to my friends who come at me with that point of view, I've got a lot of friends and family members who want to, you know, challenge me and tell me I'm wrong because of, you know, that particular thing. And I always say, look, there's a responsibility here to public safety for all of us. And do we believe in speed limits? Do we believe that we should have stop signs? Do we believe that there should be 20 miles per hour at the school zone, right? To a degree, we wish we didn't need helmet laws. We wish we didn't need all that stuff. But people in, you know, the great experiment that is our culture, they don't always take that personal responsibility seriously, so we have to have laws.
Mm-hmm.
So in this regard, we've had to put some boundaries and boxes around this issue because people, as the song just declared, coming into this conversation, they don't behave responsibly. And so what is at stake is for the American business, the American business owner, the entrepreneur, particularly the small business owner who our whole entire economy is built on the back of the small business owner, which we love and we celebrate. That person can be completely run out of business by drug problems of employees who have no boundaries.
Oh, yeah.
And
oh,
so,
yeah.
You know, this is an avenue and an opportunity for them to have some policies that say, if you're going to help me make my widgets, I'm going to expect you to do that safely. And I'll tell you, we have a lot of data out there that shows that there are entire industries that test very little compared to others, and one of them being hospitality. And I, you know, you guys mentioned early on, like, fast food, I think one of you said, or Walmart or whatever. I pulled up several months ago to a favorite donut shop, and I tried to place an order at the speaker, and the young person on the other end of that speaker just couldn't make heads or tails of what I was saying. So I pulled up to the window. I said, I'm coming to the window. So I pulled up. And this kid could not string two sentences together.
Wow.
And I said, can you get your manager for me? And when the manager came up, who was probably about the same age, they were really young, the waft of marijuana smoke just came right out the window. And I said, okay, I was going to make a complaint to you, but what I'm going to say is y'all need to stop smoking pot in the back room, and I'm going to be on my way. And they just started giggling and laughing and having a great time. Okay, those kids are running fryers in the back.
Right, I was going to say there's a lot of dangerous equipment in there.
Right, yeah, and there's food safety, and there's all, you know, they're handling cash. And so it doesn't only have to be the pilots and the over-the-road haulers that need to be concerned about safety. And the hospitality industry specifically tends to kind of turn a blind eye. But that's why you can't keep people on jobs. That's why prices go well, it's not the only reason, but it's contributing to rising costs, to shrinkage and shortages and employee theft and product theft. I mean, I could go on and on because I've seen it for years, but we, at some point in time, there's got to be some boundaries for safety. We know this works. We know it's effective. We're very proud of that, but we are constantly under attack, and we recognize that as well.
Yeah, I've just recently elected to hire a person who's going to start in a couple of weeks. They said they can pass a drug test, which is always a question I ask. And there are, you know, we have everything from over-the-road truck drivers, equipment delivery people, right down to the person that stocks the shelves. You know, all of those positions have a safety element to them. And if you are messed up, you could hurt somebody, you could hurt yourself, which goes right to a comp claim, which goes right to the bottom line of your business. So I understand the importance of doing a drug test, but I'm just not clear on the legality of, you know, okay, it's a company policy. so you have to take the drug test. Well, that's great, but company policy, I don't think, trumps state law. Like state law doesn't trump federal law. But,
yeah, how does that work when it's a, when you're in a state where they've legalized it for recreational use?
Well, like your class two.
Back to the handbook?
Well, if right. you're a truck driver, right. you fall under federal and state laws.
Right, but if you don't.
But like, if you don't, if you're the guy in the back that's stocking the shelves, it's a lot of people think, well, who cares if he gets high? What's going to happen there? Well, a lot can happen.
So it's a little bit more nuanced than that, and I'm really glad you're bringing this up because it is every company's responsibility to make sure that their policy is compliant with the state laws. But so far, there is not a single state in the United States that has not allowed employers to test for suspicion mm-hmm. or for post-accident. Now, the company needs to define what they're going to identify as post-accident because is it, did someone get injured? Did it cost the company money? What, you know, did property, was there property damage? It can't just be, and OSHA has even chimed in on this and said, it can't be, I got a bee sting because that's through nobody's fault, right? So did they do something to contribute to an accident? And if so, is it possible they were under operating under the influence? Then the drug test is warranted. So even in California, even in New York, where there are the most restrictive drug testing laws in those two states, employers have the rights to test. Look, we passed the Safe and Drug-Free Workplace Act back in the 80s mm-hmm. that says it is an employer's responsibility to make sure that employees who choose not to use drugs are protected from their coworkers who do. So employers can be sued for irresponsible hiring practices and violating labor laws if they don't take measures to protect people. So most companies, even that don't do a pre-employment test or a random drug testing pool, will still do post-accident testing, and they are still able to test for cause, which means you suspect someone is on the job operating under the influence or, under the use of a substance. I don't like saying impaired by because there's no legal definition for impairment, and Normal really comes after us for that, but intoxicated. Are they intoxicated right now on the job? You have the right not only to do the test, but to take action. So as long as they're doing that within the parameter of their state laws, the Supreme Court ruled years ago, when DOT was implementing their testing program, that they would uphold an employer's right to test. And this happened in several major transportation cases. They would uphold the, in fact, reasonable suspicion testing was upheld by the Supreme Court in a famous landmark case involving the railroad, stating that the employer only needs something more than a hunch. That's the legal wording. Only needs something more than a hunch. And if they feel like they have to be able to articulate and document the behavior. But if the behavior is there, they have the right to test, and they don't have to be right about the outcome of the test, but they do have the right to try to put the pieces of the puzzle together. Because look, people can be impaired by lack of sleep, mm-hmm. by stress, by mm-hmm. health, yeah, by mental health, right? So the drug test is just a part of the puzzle. It's a tool in the toolbox to say, oh, surprise, so-and-so is using cocaine. We did not know that. It's not always about marijuana, but quite often it is because that's the most abused drug in the United States. So it really is incumbent on the employer to decide what their boundaries for safety are. And I try to encourage employers not to look at it as a position on a drug, but as a position on safety and what the safety boundaries are for the workplace.
So that's how they get around pre-employment testing, because you have no suspicions. You have no idea whether they use or not, but you're going to test them anyway.
By and large, yes. And so there's an awful lot of companies out there that do not do the pre-employment test, but when you're looking at qualified candidates, depending on the position that you're hiring for, I have a cousin who has worked in public utilities for years and years, and he always tells me, this is my first IQ test for my new employees. Were they dumb enough to show up prepared to work, or did they come to the pre-employment test feeling and telling me they use drugs? Well, look, not all people see it that way.
It's usually, second IQ test, because the first IQ test is the person who comes in and wants to know how much vacation they get before they interview.
Right.
That would be the self-elimination tool right there.
Well, believe it or not, the pre-employment drug test is a self-elimination tool as well, because I can't tell you how many people have come in, have interviewed well, and when you ask them, hey, you're qualified, you're in the running, can you pass a drug test? Oh, yeah. Well, guess what? They never come back. Why didn't they come back? They were pretty much assured a position.
Do you find out if they didn't pass?
I never got a chance to do the drug test because they never came back.
So it's not like you did the drug test and then they disappear.
They disappear before. Oh, I've had them fail the drug test, but I've had more come in, go through the whole interview process, and then when you mention a drug test, then they don't come back for a second interview. They don't come back to do the drug test. They just vanish, and then they ghost you. Well, you know why. Because they couldn't pass a drug test.
It wasn't that they didn't like you?
Well,
you're not
probably,
taking this as
that was
a personal
a big part of it, but
not a personal problem.
I was once a part of a management team at a company, Blockbuster Video, in Nashville, and there was a guy who came in high all the time, and I just randomly said, "Don't be surprised if they do random drug tests." He never came back to work. I didn't say they were going to.
No.
I said, don't be surprised.
That's all you have to do.
Well, you know, 5 minutes ago, I apparently was channeling this moment. I have two terrific songs for you, and we have to take a quick break. Imagine that timing. Fantastic. It's a good thing I don't smoke pot. Otherwise, I'd never be able to make those things happen. That'd be terrible. Bill a towel on me. Oh, man. So you're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us,
man.
I'm afraid to wash my hair, because I might open my eyes and find someone standing there. People say I'm crazy, just a little touched. But maybe showers remind me.
Watching, yeah.
Well, I thought of another qualifier prior to doing the drug test. When you're doing the interview with somebody, you want to kind of keep track on how many times do they use the word dude, because that's a pretty good indication here. And I have had people do that. A lot of dude, a lot of hand gestures. It's like, I don't think you're going to work out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, we have hit Bill's hot button topic here, Joe. Bill is very animated today.
Well,
I'm going to hear about this for the rest of the day.
I definitely want to say that something that has made Indisa and our work unique is we also don't believe that every single employee has to be fired for failing a drug test. And that's been kind of a cultural shift in our industry over the last several years. But one of the reasons for that is because currently when you have young people coming into the workplace, and even those that are now coming into their like 30s, they've never lived in a culture in the U.S. that has not been drug friendly.
Right.
A lot of them have never had drug education. Mm. They don't even know like basic knowledge about drinking and driving. And you know what we used to get when we were kids, because MAD came on the scene and we got educated in those programs like DARE, there's been a concerted effort to get rid of DARE programs, and that's a whole other show, I promise you. But, you know, a lot of these kids have never even heard of DARE, or they hear it as a dirty word. Mm-hmm. It's something bad. So I say to employers, all the time, usually weekly, I say, I'm so sorry you had to become a drug expert in the course of what you do. That's not fair to you.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, but here I am trying to help you. And we do have people in our industry that try to take that off the employer's back and manage the policies and programs for them as third-party administrators so they can just, like, concentrate more on doing their job well. But we've gotten very involved in recovery-friendly workplace initiatives, which has kind of been spreading across the country in a grassroots way, started in New Hampshire by Governor Sununu, who is now the president of Airlines for America, I believe. And we've really seen success when employers can have second-chance policies for violations in a way that educates people, identifies whether or not they have a problem or they just did something stupid, and, you know, having them take a drug education course. Maybe they need to be on a follow-up testing program because they really do have a problem, or maybe they just need to understand there's boundaries here and you will respect them. So there's a balanced way to do this that is fair for everyone, but at the end of the day, it really is about public safety, and we need to keep our eyes on that.
Well, and so your very first thing on your website under why you guys are doing this, employee substance use costs U.S. employers more than $164 billion annually, and small business owners face upward of $7,000 per month in lost revenue due to employee turnover, absenteeism, lack of productivity, accidents, injuries, and workplace fatalities. So none of this is working out. I mean, this isn't not doing this should not be, you know, we shouldn't have one of the options be, well, we're just going to blow it off and take our chances.
Well, yeah, if you didn't do it, that number would probably be double that.
Right. You know, it's a terrible idea. Obviously, the stats prior were awful.
Yeah, you're implementing a policy that shortens that number a little bit.
Hopefully. Hey, just out of curiosity, on the federal side, so let's say like the FAA, for instance, you have somebody who works at an airport doing, I don't know, FAA-ness. I don't know. I guess maybe TSA. How about TSA? So they're a TSA inspector at the airport, and they come in to do the random drug test. I've never been drug tested, apparently. I just was thinking, like, I don't even know how this works.
Well, ask me a question. I've done lots of them.
No, but you've never – have you been drug tested?
No.
Did you drug test yourself?
I've never drug tested myself.
Oh.
But
sending the Keebler elves out of the tree to come and get you?
Huh?
All right.
Yeah.
So here's somebody who's working for TSA. The drug test person comes in. You have to, I guess, pee in a thing, container. So you have to pee a certain amount, apparently. I guess this is real. I had somebody tell me this. You have to pee a certain amount. If you can't pee a certain amount, they give you 40 ounces of water, make you sit in a chair in a special spot, and wait until you can pee the right amount. And if you can't, then I guess you get fired because technically you refused the test. Does that sound normal?
That's someone's doing it wrong.
That sounds kind of crazy, doesn't it?
Doing it wrong. So the federal model has been replicated by employers across the country for years. Scientifically, a person should be able to drink a certain amount of water and urinate within 3 hours. So if they're following the federal model, we call it a shy bladder. If they have a shy bladder and they cannot provide the specimen, we then provide them a certain amount of water and give them up to 3 hours. Now, if they cannot provide in that 3 hour time, then they need to see a physician to see if there's something, you know, medically wrong with them and is a reason why they could not provide. And if there is found to be no medical reason for why they did not provide, that would be considered a refusal because it would be considered like they intentionally avoided providing a specimen. I've seen people sit through the 3 hours, and then as soon as the timer went off, they ran to the public restroom to urinate because they were holding it on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how the federal testing works, and it is how it works for TSA employees as well because they're under the federal testing program. However, can I just say, because I don't want to run out of time to explain this to y'all, the entire federal drug testing program is under risk of of not being able to test for marijuana imminently.
Yes.
And
I didn't
want to
run out either. I know.
Yeah.
Yes.
Let's talk about that.
Good segue. Yes, let's race into the segue of the rescheduling. We had Dave Evans on last week, so we talked about a lot of the legal stuff. But, yeah, the testing and the safety and all that. And you guys also spoke out against the rescheduling.
We did. And our position is and always has been on this issue is that when President Reagan signed the executive order, he tied the science of drug testing to HHS, which at the time was the best science in the country. But in the order that and the way that all of this was set up back in the 80s and 90s, HHS is only allowed to test for drugs that are Schedule 1 and 2. They cannot certify or validate the labs to test for anything over a Schedule 1 or 2. So with the current administration making marijuana a Schedule 3 drug, HHS can no longer certify the SAMHSA-certified labs that we are required to use to test for marijuana. Therefore, Schedule 3 would have the federal Schedule 3 would have the unintended consequence of immediately taking marijuana out of the, you know, standard 5-panel drug test that's been used for years.
But that's meaning that only federal, be on the federal side, right?
Well, it is on the federal side.
But that's
however,
like the standard for everything, right?
Right. That's the standard for everything. There's 23 states that say your state drug test policy must follow DOT.
Okay.
And also, there's no state protections, right? There's very few states have any requirements on drug testing and those parameters and how you test and whatnot. A lot of them have some rules of things you can't do, but there are very few have any guidance on what it should look like except for follow the DOT model. So we could be looking at coming into an era where we cannot test federal employees for marijuana. That would include all of the modes of Department of Transportation, Coast Guard, which includes FAA, transit, railroad, you know, FMCSA, all of that.
But and Amtrak, who already has such a great safety record.
Right? But it also includes all federal employees under the federally mandated Safe and Drug-Free Workplace Act, which are over 600 agencies, and it includes anyone who carries a gun in their job or has safety or security protocols, security clearances, et cetera. We're talking TSA, CIA, FBI, all of that. Testing for marijuana can go away overnight as soon as our new attorney general hears from the DEA that they're going to pull the trigger under pressure, and the attorney general recommends to the president that we're a go.
What about Congress?
So Congress, you know, they could step in with a rule. So what?
No, I mean about them being tested. Congress being tested.
Oh, well,
there's no testing.
If they are tested, yeah, it's anybody. I mean, it's anybody. It's in any federal program. So ultimately, we have been advocating for a safety carve out to protect the DOT testing program since our inception, and we continue to advocate for that. And that's what our testimony was about with the DEA. We need the safety carve-out. This must be protected. And we have people that really believe in us and really want this to happen. The problem is there's a lot of confusion. Like, for instance, the DOT would probably tell you, I don't know, they've changed their opinion a few times, they would probably tell you, no, we have the authority to test. Nothing will happen. It's not whether or not they have the authority to test. It's not whether or not any of them have authority. The problem is the labs can't be certified to do it.
Uh-huh.
And so that's where the problem is that we've been trying to get fixed. We do have some pretty weak language that's been added as an afterthought or an amendment to the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee's Resurfacing Authorization Act. We had really strong language in there, and then it got yanked, and then it got added back in as an amendment at the last minute because they realized, oh, this also includes air traffic controllers. Bad idea. Let's tack this on. But the piece that got tacked on is not the the strong language that we need to really protect the whole program. So we're working on that, but what we're staring down the barrel of right now is a race between the Resurfacing Authorization Act completion and the completion of Federal Schedule 3. Who's going to get there first?
Right.
And if rescheduling gets there before the safety carve-out, we could have a gap in testing for marijuana in transportation that I don't even want to think about. But it does keep me awake at night, I promise you that.
Is as far as drug testing goes, is marijuana the number one thing that shows up in drug tests?
Yes.
Okay.
By far, yes.
Yeah, so I figured.
Yeah, the Quest Diagnostics Drug Testing Index, which has been published for over 30 years annually, has shown that since 2012, increases year over year for marijuana positivity have gone up dramatically. We've had the highest positive positivity rate since drug testing began. And they report on it every year. They did a big press release about it just a few weeks ago for the 2025 data. And but they are cautioning the current data, if you put it up against graphs from previous years, appears that marijuana positivity is dropping, but that's not accurate. What's happening is testing for marijuana is dropping.
Right.
The positivity rates by percentage are still going up, but employers are dropping the test, so the test numbers are going down, which is shrinking the data set or data pool. But marijuana is the most commonly abused drug in the United States by far. It used to be alcohol, but marijuana is surpassing it in some sectors. It just depends on kind of like the region you live in, if your state has legalization or not. Legal states have far greater positivity than non-legal states, clearly. So, yeah, it is. It's the greatest problem that we have for safety in the U.S.
Yeah. Do drug tests... do they test for alcohol?
We do test for alcohol. Now, we don't pre-employment test for alcohol unless it's very highly safety sensitive. So you have some sectors that will say you just cannot go on this job unless you have an alcohol test. So there's some mining operations that you cannot walk into that job unless you take an alcohol test.
Right.
And so it just depends on what the job is, but in the DOT program, testing for alcohol is, for post-accident, for reasonable cause, on randoms. But what the DOT program does is every year, based on the previous year's positivity, they set a random test rate standard. So alcohol is never tested as prevalently as drugs because the positivity rate is so much lower. People tend to totally understand I shouldn't go to work drunk, but going to work high seems to be like we haven't quite gotten there yet, right?
Yeah.
So, for instance, most DOT programs will test for 50% of the employees over the course of a year for drugs and 10% for alcohol. And those numbers can be different based on which mode of transportation it is and their data, et cetera. But that tends to kind of be the standard. So, yeah, we do test for alcohol.
What about military? So this would also preclude drug testing in our military?
Not
for
quite,
marijuana?
Because the military tends to operate under their own authority, right? And so they don't fall under these parameters. The military and nuclear regulatory control established their own separate testing authority years ago and how they do it and all of that. So, and military is completely internal to them.
Okay.
They don't have to worry about the SAMHSA certified labs and all of that. In fact, I think a lot of them can even use certain types of rapid test devices as long as they confirm it with a lab-based confirmation. But, I also will say this particular case won't impact the military testing. That does not mean they won't change policies because they are under a tremendous amount of pressure to do so. So I think we could see a day coming in the future where those programs change.
And what is I know we're going to have to take a quick break here, but I know they have different types of testing. They have blood, urine, saliva, hair. Which one of those is the most accurate? Would it depend on the drug or the time of use? And which one of those is the most accurate and most popular?
That is such a good question. I mean, urine is most popular.
Bill is just killing it today.
He is. Urine is the most popular because it's the most affordable, and it is highly evidentiary, which means it's held up in court, you know, hundreds of times.
Mm-hmm.
Hair is history. So when you do a hair test, and these are all very highly accurate tests when performed by a SAMHSA-certified lab, okay? Hair, you go back 30 days, and you can go back 90 days depending on how much hair is tested. So there are some industries that use hair. The trucking industry loves hair testing. They would love for it to be part of the federal panel. They want to see who they're putting out there on the road, and it's particularly some trucking companies that have done hair testing traditionally, but even like the Trucking Alliance, very pro-hair, American Trucking Association, very pro-hair, which, you know, we support them in that. But hair would not be what you would want to do for a certain type of test. Like if you're going to do a post-accident test, a hair test is going to say, well, this has been in their system, you know, 30 days ago. You're going to have a hard time proving that in court, that was recent use.
Right.
So your urine test is solid. It will hold up. But I am really excited about lab-based oral fluid testing, which DOT approved in 2023. However, we've had a little hold up at the FDA. We're trying to get it through.
And what is it? Lab-based what?
Oral fluid.
Oh, oral fluid.
So the yeah, the mouth swab.
Oh, okay.
The saliva.
Oral fluid. Yeah. That was secret lab talk there. Sorry.
Yeah, sorry. So the saliva, lab-based saliva test, that is a great test because it can detect use within a few hours of marijuana. And a lot of employers, I think, will like it as far as, like, those that are in legal states because it won't look back past 24 hours in most cases. Mm. The devices can be different. Some have a 36-hour look back and don't go beyond that. Some are 24. We're trying to. There's a lot of companies that are trying to get it down to, like, a 12-hour window so you know there's use within 12 hours. Some are telling me they're working on a 6-hour look back. So you would really know what someone has used, like, within from the last hour to 6, 12, 24 hours, and it's not going beyond that. And so the hope is that will make it more, you know, quote, fair for the employee who lives in a legal state. So drug testing is always evolving. New technologies are coming all the time. I'm really going to go look for that gum because I want to know what that's about.
Yeah, we're going to have to do a little more probing on that during the break. We've got to take one last quick break, and then we're going to come back with our guest. Been a wealth of information today, Jo McGuire. She's the executive director of the National Drug and Alcohol Screening Association. You can find out all about her and contact info at wethepeopleradio.us.
I can't get these memories out of my mind. And some kind of madness has started to evolve. I tried so hard to let you go, but some kind of madness is swallowing me whole. Yeah.
He said hello and put me on hold. To say the least, the cat was cold. He said, don't call us, child, we'll call you. I said, you got my number? He said, yeah, I got it. We walked in the door.
Bill's drug testing theme song, dude. Oh, my God. So, Joe, we have like 10 minutes. I knew we would blow through this really fast. There's just so much with this rescheduling that just sirens going off outside the window. Well-timed. It is. This is just like an emergency. We're looking at a major problem.
It's going to affect all kinds of stuff.
Absolutely.
Do they seem to get that? I get the impression from people who testified in that they're not really getting that.
They don't really get it. In fact, I'm sure you heard from David Evans that in the hearing we were pretty shocked that the attorneys on behalf of the DEA asked questions in a way that led us to believe that their mindset was very pro Schedule III. It was interesting, shocking, and a little heartbreaking, to be honest with you. But one of the arguments to me was, well, why can't a company just test under their own authority? Well, they didn't ask me that. They just said a company can test under their own authority, right? In some states, yes. In some states, no. And what they're getting at is, okay, American Airlines, can they test under their own authority? If federal testing ends up with this problem, well, why can't American Airlines or whoever just test on their company policy and this is not a big deal? First of all, the reason that President Reagan had to step in with an executive order is because the unions were fighting against the modes of transportation, fighting against drug testing, screaming about it, personal rights, civil rights, all of that, violation of constitutional rights, everything. And they were prohibiting and eliminating drug testing in these arguments, lawsuits. I mean, it'll invoke a plethora of lawsuits. So it's not just can a company test under their authority, and you brought it up earlier when you were asking me about state laws. I mean, some of these airlines, the challenges that we're having, and I'm sorry I'm tripping over my words, but there's a lot going on in my brain. A company can only operate within their own state authority, right? Well, not everybody is hubbed out of a certain state in American Airlines, or any airlines for that matter. So, hey, where is Alaskan Airlines based out of Seattle? So are they what do those state laws say? They will be beholden to those state laws, but also they don't just have one location. There's hubs everywhere. So Southwest, they could do one thing in Texas, but where else are they located? And where are those employees based out of? And what state laws are they beholden to? Because they're not always just operating within a state. Truck drivers, they might be hired by a company in X state, but they're traveling across the country and back. What state law applies where they are? And these are things that have not been made abundantly clear in drug testing law as of yet. What it will take is lawsuits and court decisions to decide those things. And so we could be deciding those things for decades to come based on what judges think, based on appeals, based on can these things get to the Supreme Court. We are looking at a mess.
Yeah.
And it's better to keep the federal program intact and not have to fight this out in the courts. This is going to cost companies billions of dollars to defend or give up and then just pay out on settlements for the accidents and the injuries. Which cost do we want? The best way to do this is to protect the federal testing program and stop creating, all of this mess on the side.
Mm-hmm. Well, sure, because once all the accident profile returns, the link that we have up for your organization, that is Marijuana and Safety Sensitive Work, that was from July 13th, and just all of it, you have one whole category, the lies, challenging marijuana is safer than alcohol, all of that then basically goes kind of back to square one.
Mm-hmm, it does. It just all resets back to where we were. And there was a congressional report before the Omnibus Transportation Employee Testing Act came into effect, and that congressional report outlined the accidents that I had mentioned earlier from public transit, from airline, from railway, from federal motor carriers, from Coast Guard. It was across the board, and lives were lost, and we certainly don't want to go back. I mean, the one that we always point to, our big watershed moment, was the Chase Conrail's Maryland train crash of 1981, which I'm sorry, 87, which I mentioned right up at the top. That train operator was operating under the influence of marijuana. In fact, his name was Ricky Gates. He and his brakeman were smoking on the train while they were operating it. They missed signal after signal after signal to stop, to change track, and they just missed them all, repeated signals. They ended up colliding with a passenger train full of people who were coming home from holiday break after Christmas. I believe it was January 6th. I mean, over 2,000 people were killed. Wow. The children were killed. People were maimed. I've met a woman who survived that crash. She was coming home to go back to college after the holidays. She has looked me in the face and said, please don't ever allow something like this to happen again. And if you guys look this up, you might remember, I was in college, and at that time, 87, we didn't have 24 hours news cycles. We still had, you know, the big three in PBS.
Right.
It was on every news channel through the night. They were trying to rescue people in the bitter cold. They couldn't find them. They couldn't see. It was basically a railway that went through a neighborhood. The devastation was horrendous, and that was like the linchpin of saying enough is enough. But that certainly was not the only crash that had happened. We can't go backwards, and we have to stop ignoring this issue.
Well, and so there will be. So what's the when you tell them that? I guess we shouldn't, you know, we shouldn't leave without giving, you know, the bird's eye view. When you told them all that in the hearings, what's the response? Is it just, you know, hurry on to the next thing, or that's not real?
Yeah.
I mean, do they try to deny that that's real?
At this point, a complete non-response. We will see what the administrative law judge says after hearing the testimony. We don't know what that's going to be yet.
Uh-huh.
But at the moment in time, there was no response. And like I said, there's a lot of belief that this will not happen. I have sat in many offices in D.C. begging them for this over the course of 8 years. And I can name names of people who said, we just don't believe that'll ever happen. We don't think it's going to unfold that way. Someone somewhere will fix it. Who's going to fix it?
Like they're not going to reschedule it?
Right. Well, no. That they just don't think that our interpretation of
the bad things will happen.
Yeah. They're like, well, yeah. So we're straight up telling them HHS will have to remove that approval to test from the labs, and they're like, we don't think that'll really happen. But I'll tell you something. HHS, internally, the drug testing program, they know that is what they have to do, and they've been asking us, what's your prediction on when we've got to remove this from the drug test based on what you're seeing in D.C.? Of course, I can't answer that question yet because I don't have the crystal ball of how the administration is going to roll this out. But at the end of the day, we know it. We're just trying to convince the policymakers of it, and there we do have champions. Look, there's some great people who care about this issue. They're working hard on our behalf. We've got some people who really do care, but I think we still got a ways to go to get this. And people can always write their representatives and senators and say, support the safety carve-out in the transportation infrastructure bill. Susan Collins is looking at doing something through appropriations. We've got people who really, you know, Sessions is great on this. I mean, if I start naming names, I'm going to get in trouble because I'm going to forget people. But there's people who really care, and they get it, and they're on our side. But we've got to see this happen in a big way. I will say, disappointingly, the White House has just been silent. And we've even provided sample language for an executive order so they can take care of it. We've heard nothing back.
That's too bad. I tell you what, I drive on the freeway every day, and I got to say it's scary to drive around a big rig. First of all, people don't respect the distance required for them to stop. They'll pull in front of them. They'll brake light them. They'll, you know. But the truck drivers themselves, I've seen a really degrading quality of driving with these drivers in the last few years. They cross the line, they hit the dots on the side, they I mean, just terrible driving. And I know they've come out with a lot of stories about licensing and that sort of thing. But I just wonder how much of this is drug related, because these guys are not they're not qualified to drive a big rig. And that thing is a missile going down the road. If you make one mistake, that thing's going to scatter cars all over the place. And people, I think, really need to pay closer attention to the truck drivers out on the road. I mean, there's plenty of great truck drivers out there, been doing it a long time. But there's a new batch out there now that they can drive it in a straight line. But when they pull off the road, and I see this every almost not every day, but every month I see this. They'll come off the highway, they'll pull into our yard, and they can't turn that truck around without crashing.
You're right.
They'll crash into stuff. We had one that hooked a he was turning around our yard. He hooked a tractor and flipped it over, and then just kept going. He's like, oh, whatever. I didn't even notice. Didn't even know he did it. And but you see that a lot with these truck drivers. It's people really need to pay attention.
And in my last 5 seconds, we have to thank Joe McGuire for winding Bill up to a level heretofore not seen.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go home and have a drink.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been a delight. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. We want to do it again when we have when you have more for us. You can contact us anytime. You can find everything about the program, including the commercial free archives, at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
You know there ain't no rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on trees. We got bills to pay. We got minds to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. I know we can't slow down, we can't hold back, though you know we wish we could. I know there ain't no rest for the wicked until we close our eyes for good.